Postdoc transformation. Postdoc transformation. Postdoc transformation. Invest in your postdoc transformation. Welcome to the seasonal show for scientists leaping into business. In every sponsored episode, we are happy to recommend employers of choice for you. Make sure to check your readiness to leap out of science with us for free, as linked in the show notes. For your career transition, we offer customized career transition e-courses and memberships also at graduate schools all over the world. Maybe yours too. And if your university isn't yet our customer, enroll in your free email course for career transition made simple, as linked in the show notes. I'm your host, Professor Dr. Eleanor Sui Winkles, with my team who is rooting for you. And let's build your postdoc transformation with this episode. If you are a postdoc transformer with people leadership aspirations, you are in for a treat. In this Postdoc Transformation Show episode, I have the honor to interview one of my role models, Dr. Tina Persson. And she is a global executive coach helping senior leaders, C-level executives, and high-potential leaders to achieve their goals. She is also a sought-after speaker at international venues, and she'll talk about that later, for her expert leadership and team coaching. She is also adept at empowering researchers to pave their way to a smooth transition from the academic world to a fulfilling business-driven career. And this is why she really is a role model for many of us. But she has already moved on. She is not only the creator of two podcasts, the PhD Career Coaching Podcast, and also the PhD Career Stories, which are linked in the show notes, but she's also now doing something else, and that is really inspirational for all of us. So I believe that she'll be talking about also future skills and adaptability. So without further ado, welcome to the stage, welcome to the Postdoc Transformation Show, Dr. Tina Persson.
Thank you so much for this absolutely wonderful introduction. I feel really, really flattered here by you, Eleanor. And thank you also for sharing with me that I'm sort of a role model. That was very, very lovely of you. And of course, it warms my heart because 15 years ago, then I transitioned from assistant professor to the corporate world. And it was far beyond an easy transition at the time being. Indeed, went from assistant professor to a recruiter and headhunter. And I believe I was one of the first PhDs in my country, in Sweden, doing that sort of pivoting, fairly steep pivoting, because it is indeed a transformation of 180 degrees, going from academia, governmental, and to the corporate, business-oriented. It's basically selling people. So thank you a lot. It really warms my heart. I'm happy to be on your podcast and share what I have learned and whatever you like to learn from me. Thank you.
Absolutely, our pleasure. So I want to ask you about leadership. For an individual with big ambitions, good leadership is key to succeed in an organization. So would you agree that leadership begins with the individual and then invites the people, or is there another way to look at it? What do you think?
Leadership must start with yourself. It's very difficult to lead people if you don't know how to lead yourself. I would put it this way, that what we train, if you now talk and focus a bit on the academic environment, what you're training in academia is a lot working with your own project. Then we cross-collaborate internationally, but we're still very focused on our own job, because in the end, we need to publish. We need to create these results that is good for my individualistic career. And you also train a lot of technical skills. So you measure yourself by the amount of articles that you publish. And we sort of in academia define ourselves with the amount of articles and citation. And then we show off on the stage. Yeah. Then you go to the other side. And I usually tell my clients that you can have the best technical skills in the world. If you are not a people person, in the sense that people like to work with you, that people don't refer you, and they don't want to have you in the team, and you can't communicate efficiently, which I call feedback or take feedback with your manager. you will not be successful. And it's very difficult in that situation to lead other people. So yes, you need to develop very quickly some sort of people skill and self-awareness. And to that, and I will come back to that, I will define it with three things. We have an IQ defining our ability. Then we have emotional intelligence, our ability to build social relationships, how social we are, and then how we manage. When I'm stressed, when I'm irritated, when I have, let's say, I'm not very resilient, how I react to negative emotions and setbacks, that's part of resilience. And that is part of emotional intelligence. This you need to develop. But now, in this very fast-changing world, driven by AI, organizations, they change so fast. So now, you also need to develop your AQ, which is adaptability. And we can come closer into what is adaptability. So yeah, a postdoc, a person that's trained in academia, need to put on more levels and technical skills to be successful, whether that is to become a future leader, manager, because leader and management goes hand in hand, or career pivoting for growing in your career.
And once you have determined your readiness to leap and want to transition into business or industries, then you can enroll in your free email course with 10 actionable, bingeable email lessons until you start your job in business. You'll get 10 emails like this. Number 1, how to leap out of science. Number 2, how to build your sustainable LinkedIn profile. Number 3, how to read social media and network. Number 4, how to research your favorite jobs and employers. Number 5, how to do informational interviews to get insights. Number 6, how to create your customized applications with ChatGPT. Number 7, how to prepare your thesis from a business point of view. Number 8, how to apply to your favorite employers. Number 9, how to choose the right job offer. Number 10, how to prepare for your new job.
That's great, Tina. You have touched base with a lot of buzzwords that I really do think that are important these days. And in last episode, I also talked about resilience with Dr. Rima Day, so that really goes hand in hand with that episode that you are presenting. What do you think are some questions to raise more self-awareness? Because that was one of the things that you mentioned, that before we can lead others, we have to be self-aware. So do you think that academia is the best place to learn more about oneself? Or do you think that scientists leaping into business should also find other places where they can hone those skills to become a better leader for the business place in the future?
You said something really good here, and I love to hear that, because this is the reason with my podcast, because I had a mission and vision with the podcast PhD Career Stories. I could have started that podcast myself and just be a host, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I wanted to have a team. And the idea behind having a volunteering team was that they train team building. In this team, they are introduced to different sort of communication tools, how to store things, how to work, how to communicate, how to support each other, you know, work as a team, which means it is, the team is one unit and they take collective responsibility over producing the podcast. And I am not involved. A group is individuals working together, but they don't take collective responsibility. And to transform this with the team took 1 to 2 years, because in the beginning, they individually came to me and asked for help. And I always said, don't come to me, ask the team. So yes, I would say, if you are sitting in academia today, I don't believe the academic environment is the best place to train self-awareness, because it's not important there. And now I'm going to say something that you can read. And I talked with a professor about this, and we actually had a lot of fun, because I can reflect back on myself. I can take myself as a very good example. I will storytell a little bit about it. But if you can be in academia, you read a lot of books about leadership. You read a lot of books about emotional intelligence. You know everything, but that's procrastination. You know the theory, but you don't apply it to yourself. Because in order to apply it, you have to be in an environment where you actually can train. So you can't just read and then you understand. It gives us all some sort of awareness of that, you know, what it is really on a theoretical level, but you have to start to apply it. And I just say, following that, when I worked in academia, I was sort of a different person from what I am today, because I was in my stress sort of Tina. I was a stress Tina. So I was like, you know, always reacting, very reactive behavior, defending my opinions. And I couldn't really take in other people's opinions. And I was frustrated and a little bit angry. And I was reading a lot of books, but I didn't change because I needed tough feedback from industry, from managers and leaders in industry, telling me that, Tina, you are not very nice to work with. And honestly, the colleagues are complaining here because you are sitting isolated. You need to learn to communicate. And do you know what? I'm going to share something very embarrassing here. Like when the manager told me that you need to communicate better, I didn't understand because I thought I was communicating. Because I was communicating as in academia. But in the corporate, communicating is giving and taking and asking for help. Actually, spontaneously take charge and responsibility over things and discuss with the people, is this something you're interested in? So I actually work on things that the team has agreed on is important. But I didn't understand because I was so individualistic. So I couldn't see the bigger picture of where I am in the organization, my role as a professional in the organization. And that is part of emotional intelligence, to understand that. And this is what happened when I get clients and they have got the first job in the corporate. And then they call me and say, Tina, something wrong with this job. I don't know. Yeah. And I listen carefully and I say, yeah, right. Now they are in this moment. We need to develop self-awareness that it's up to them to change. And that's a hard lesson to tie. But the good thing is it's coachable. You can train it if you're open-minded and if you are coachable. Yeah. You need to be coachable. And to be coachable, Eleanor, means you must be able to take feedback from your coach. You must be able to listen to me when I say and I give you, do you know what? Instead of defending yourself, you need to be open like that. Aha! That's the moment you start to grow. So long story short, leadership in academia is vastly different from self-awareness training in industry.
That was a beautiful answer in helping us understand the situation that a scientist fresh from university may face, because one could think that people in academia are the same in business, but they are more diverse, right? So the first time leader must lead the people at hand. So that means that when you get promoted or when you get a new job, then you have to deal with the people who are there. You cannot change them. You have to change yourself.
Yes.
So you have to adapt to the situation. So I have to deal with the people at hand in my team to reach the company's goals. So what can I ask myself, or what can I ask them to be able to lead them to our company's success?
I think, you know, we can step back a little bit and say that for scientific people going direct from academia to, and it's very rare they get a leading position immediately. The leading position they usually get is responsibility over projects. Yeah. And this is, you know, when I check big companies, they know that. And this is the reason that it's not fair to the person to take a scientist fresh from university and put them in a leading role because they don't have the network in the company. So in order to be a good manager, you must build up your network so you understand and know who to talk to, having these sort of network, so you are founded in the company. That is not done in 1 year. It usually takes 2, 3, 4 years. So I have noticed on LinkedIn, in average, people that I have been coaching for bigger companies, it takes in average 3 years before they step up to a more responsibility job. So you must have, and now coming back to what you talked about, resilience. And why I say this is that the longer you stay in academia and the more titles you're building, the more articles you're building, it could be a feeling of when you take your first job that you are stepping down. And that feeling you can feel, but you have to take it because you need to start here to learn to work in a completely different new setup. And develop yourself in a tempo that's healthy for you. And that is part of self-awareness, communication, and of course, understanding the company, understand the broader ecosystem in that company. And for that, you need to build resilience.
And now it's time to thank Company ABC, who sponsors this episode of the Postdoc Transformation Show. I would now be reading the company's answers to one of 6 bold questions so that you can choose to apply. For example, number 1, describe your most valuable experts versus leaders in your company. Have they typically earned a doctor title? Number 2, for which of your company roles or units do you encourage somebody with a doctor title to apply? Number 3, how would you describe your organizational culture in which your most valuable experts and leaders thrive in? To nominate an employer of choice so that we can ask our informative bold questions, let us know via the click on the link. If you are a company representative, like in recruiting and employer branding, and now you want your company to be highlighted as an employer of choice for our audience, you can become a sponsor of a dedicated Postdoc Transformation Show episode. Just click on the link in the show notes. And now, back to the Postdoc Transformation episode.
So, storytelling. Big mistake, yeah, and then I tell you what you should do. But I had numerous of clients, they come to me and say, you know, I went to my manager and I told my manager I was bored in the job and I wanted something else. And I said, okay, how long have you been in the company? 6 months to a year, maybe 2 years. And I said, that's too short time. So if you are bored, you should instead communicate with your manager how you can orient yourself in the company and what positions in the future might be relevant for you. Meanwhile, you still deliver. So you build relationships. So the focus should not be on your technical advancement. It should be on building relationships in the company. So you actually learn self-awareness, learn the relationship building part, emotional intelligence, adaptability. So you develop that, building a network, and that should occupy you for the next, so that you are a logical choice when the time comes, they are looking for a person in a new position. Everyone says, we have this Eleanor. She's really nice. She's on the meeting. She's very constructive. She's done a good job. She's ready to take the step. So be that guy, the good to go guy that people have in mind when they recruit you internally. But for that, you need a lot of resilience and strategy, a bit of politics.
And did you know that we offer deep dive e-course workshops and memberships at graduate schools, maybe also at yours in the future? Ask your graduate school coordinator whether they want to book my services so that I can deliver them to you 24/7, 365 on your mobile device. And even better, if you get us paid by your grad school, we will pay you 50% recurring sales commissions. So you will earn money with us as we help you and your PhD besties to transition into business. We can build a postdoc transformation together. Woohoo!
Right. May I also insert something, because that is something that I would love to use in my lectures, because I'm teaching also industrial and occupational psychology. I'm a psychologist. And what I always see my bachelor and master students, I want them to understand the supply chain within a company.
Yeah.
For job rotation, job enrichment, job enlargement,
yes,
everything.
Yes.
So they should understand their position and then what they can do to improve the contributions of themselves as a team lead, as a team member, of the whatever they are doing, but to understand the bigger picture and to strategize and to also prepare and position oneself for a better position within the career ladder upwards.
Yeah.
And that means job crafting. So that's the term that hopefully my students will recognize when they listen to this. It is job crafting, okay?
It's job crafting, yeah. And you need to be smart. And some people are very good in job crafting. But coming back, I forgot I deviated from another question. That was, you know, to learn to work with adaptability or work with a team or creating a team is to lose control. So it's a sort of mixture that you are a manager and leader, and these two need to go hand in hand because sometimes you must manage people simply, and then you need to be a leader. And to give team responsibility, so they take a collective responsibility, means you must allow your team to have psychological safety, they must have trust, and they must be able to fail without you then, you know, being completely angry at them or punishing them. And this is not done in a week. It's not done in half a year. It's a process where the team feel and they are building sort of a dynamic within themselves, so they take collective responsibility. So you basically can a little bit start to manage the team. You as a leader work for the team. And that's a big difference from being only a manager. And this is very difficult to express when it happens, but this is the reason why some teams works much better than other teams. So a team that is very adaptable compared to a team that is not very adaptable. There can be many factors around that, but commonly it's a leadership question. Important factors for a team adaptability is, first of all, the team must have a dynamic. You know, all people can't be the same. You know, you need to have different characters in the team. You know, the optimistic guy, the negative guy. But then the team in general must have a big hope. They must believe in the manager. They must trust the manager. They must actually believe in the company and maybe believe in the world. Because if we don't have hope, yeah, and I'm looking at you and me here now, like, if we are sitting here having a coffee and both of it, we have no hope for the future, why should we adapt? There's no point. So we need to build hope, super important. Then you need team resilience, so that the team constantly come back from setbacks and that they are open enough within the team to take in opposite stance and explore new things and maybe willing to completely unlearn what they do today to do something completely different. Just to mention some of these factors important for hope. Then, of course, a team needs an environment, you know, that company support. Or how is the stress level? And we will not talk about mental health, but if you are stressed, it's blah, 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 which I was last evening. And what do? When I'm stressed, I send an email to the wrong professor because, you know, I'm clicking and, you know, and I screwed it up. Because I'm too stressed, I'm not very constructive, I'm not very creative. So this is, of course, also something, but we will not dig into that here today. So we keep it to, you know, the general terms of an adaptable team. And the manager of such a team is super important.
Absolutely. And the concepts of leadership in terms of transformational versus transactional are the keywords for my own students. And that also determines which industries there are.
Yes.
That are suitable for you, because I would also say it's not just the world, because that's maybe too big, but the industry, you should be hopeful that this is the right industry for you to embark your new career, right?
Yes.
So you don't want to join a big ship that is sinking in the near future.
No.
But instead, you want to be stepping into a new world that really gives you hope
Exactly, because it gives hope because of industry. And this is good. I like this, because now what I hear is that when you come, usually from a postdoc career, that is that you are looking for security. Yeah. So you have this security. Yeah, I want a secure job. So you need to start to think, what is a secure job? But the thing is that if you maybe join an industry that seems to be secure today, might not be the future industry. And I take one example, like Spotify. Yeah. You know, Spotify is a Swedish company. And I remember when they started, actually, in a little box in Stockholm, no one wanted to work for them. Because who wanted to work for this little unsecured company? No one. But now everyone wants to work for Spotify. And this is, again, and now we are talking about that some people, you know, you should be ahead of your time to read newspapers, stay tuned with what's going on in the world at the moment. We know that maybe 400 million people will lose their jobs in classical industry. 40% of the workforce will have to upskill into new industries. So a postdoc that read newspapers, try to figure out what's going on, what industry is growing, you should join there, even though the job may look unsecured, because you secure your career by adding skills for the future, not adding a mindset and skills for the past. And unfortunately, when you have that security in yourself, you go for the last, you go for the secured past job, because you think that's a safe way. And I can do what I call a cliffhanger. I'm hanging on to the past instead of looking, wow, I joined that team. Weird people, you know? Because in the next 2 years, there might be 100 people. And that, when you took that job, your career will be boom, straight up.
Have you found this episode so far helpful for yourself? Well, maybe you can subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or wherever you get our show. And also, share this episode with your PhD bestie, because that would encourage us to help the underprivileged, underrepresented, and underserved early career scientists leaping into business. This would also ensure that you don't miss a future episode. Also, our subscription and listening numbers are key for finding the right sponsors for our show so that we can help you for free. And now, back to the show.
Absolutely agreed. I haven't shared probably with you that when I did my PhD in neuroscience after I did my diploma in psychology, I also leaped out into the IT industry.
Yeah.
And everyone was thinking, like, what and why that huge leap, and you had nothing to offer to them. And basically it was just English and common sense that I was offering to the IT industry.
Yeah.
But I had the best and steepest learning curve I could have ever imagined. Ever. At the end of the day, I was working for Accenture, the global consulting company, and I was in IT strategy because I was able to see what is possible.
Yeah.
So, and that really was the best thing that I could do, and also now can give back to my own students. I'm a professor of industrial and occupational psychology, so I'm not teaching digitization and IT strategy, but everything that I have learned in that world still drives my own business today and the way I teach.
Yeah.
And I really think that you, as a scientist leaping into business, you have to lead yourself into the future.
Yeah.
And not just, you know, follow others where they are. They're all going to UX. I'm going to UX. They're all doing medical liaisons. I'm going to. No, you have to understand what you bring to the table. And that's the self-awareness that you were talking about.
Yes.
And now I'd love to sort of like switch gears to what are the things that you do? How can postdoc transformers work with you? I've seen you speaking on stages in Orlando, in Stockholm. So you're Swedish, but you seem to be all over the place. What's cooking in your kitchen, so to speak?
Yeah, what's cooking in my kitchen? Well, here I'm sitting in the kitchen here. You know, yeah, I live in a very small room flat in south part of Sweden, in Malmö. And I'm placed myself here in this small flat because it's close to the airport. So I can very easily go to Germany, France, or Spain, or Portugal, United States. Well, United States is a bit further away, but to Europe at least. So yes, I'm Swedish, but most of my clients are coming from UK. Germany is a big base for me, but my clients are coming from all over the world at the moment. Because in the end, it doesn't matter when I career coach people. If you are looking for a job in United States, UK, Spain, Portugal, Germany, everything is digital today. The strategy of looking for a job and working with yourself is global and universal. I am a coach. I work with people, either in a group setting, which we call workshops. And I use all my experience and background to help people to transform. I am a transformation coach, whether it is in your career, you feel stuck in your career, nothing happened, I feel lost, I don't know where to go. That's what I work with. Or leaders that got stuck, leaders and team people that got bad feedback from 360. So the company says that, Tina, you have to skill this leader because they got really, really, really bad feedback from the 360. But we believe in the person. So let's start a journey, because everything about leadership can be learned. It's very few people that are natural born leaders. They are so few, they hardly exist, but they do exist. They want to be leaders because they love people. And now I say love people, because if you're going to be a leader and a great manager, Eleanor, you must love people, because leading people is always connected to a lot of problems. So you must love to solve people problems and see other people growing. Because that's, for me, in coaching, we can have tough discussions. But when my clients sign a contract or they advance in the career, I feel, oh, God, that's the best thing that can happen to me. Or I can see a leader shining and getting, you know, their self-respect back, and they feel more confident. And I can see them on stage. Wow. And one person that has been growing in my team is both Rui Cruz, who takes more and more responsibility, now stepping back, but still part of the team because he feels responsibility. And Elizabeth and Cleo and all the other people that I have, I forgot some of the names, I can share them later, but they start to do things that's so far off the comfort zone, like Elizabeth, being a host like you. And she did that. That warms my heart. Yeah, that's why I do this job. So I am a coach. So collaborating with you would be lovely. It's just coaching, or if, you know, any sort of inspirational things so we can share knowledge about the future. So you and I make the people in academia ready for the future. I know I speak a lot, but there's one thing that is a big mission for me. And I have a keynote at Max Planck about that. Education need to change. The whole academic system need to change and be dressed for the future. I don't know how yet, but it needs to be done, because it can't be, if I had children, send my children to university. They study hard. They pay a lot of money. In the United States, you pay for it. In Europe. And then when they leave, they have mental health issues and they are not attractive on the market. Can't be. If I had children, Eleanor, I wouldn't advise them to do a PhD today. If they want to, I would, of course, support them, but I wouldn't advise them. I would tell them to go straight to industry, and then they could take courses and upskill by using digital, Yale and Rockefeller, MIT courses while they are working.
Totally agree. I do have two children, and I already said that once my eldest is old enough, I will teach her everything I know. She doesn't have to do a PhD unless she wants to become a professor, which is why? A huge why. And if so, how? I mean, it's like, that's a rabbit hole you don't want to send your own child to. You and I have been through that. I don't want either of them, him as well, to have this heartbreak. And I absolutely agree that we need change in education. And yeah, that is not just in Germany. Many leaders, the managing directors that I'm interviewing in the future of work of industry XYZ, they don't think that a PhD is needed.
No.
For the kind of jobs that they have at hand to lead their industry, their company, whatever, into the future.
No.
So what are the things that you think, other than adaptability, are needed to be successful in the future for an individual, the postdoc transformer, the scientist who listens to this podcast? Is there anything that you want to sort of like share before we wrap up?
From episode 1 and counting, I have proudly hosted all our Postdoc Transformation Show episodes on Podbean. As a former IT strategy consultant, I have high requirements on my tech stack, and Podbean is my perfect fit for a podcast host. If you want to create your own individual podcast or one for, you know, internal upskilling and communications within a company, DM or email me Podbean so I can share my experience and consult you. You can also use my affiliate links for perks launching your own podcast with Podbean. I built my postdoc transformation as a digital business, and I chose ActiveCampaign to be the centerpiece of all my services like email course, podcast newsletter, show notes, website, sales page, merch shop, forms, whatever it is. As needed, ActiveCampaign is a must-have recommendation. I use it daily. If you want to create your own digital business with various lead magnets and funnel options, DM or email me ActiveCampaign so I can share my experience and consult you. You can also use my affiliate links for perks launching your own digital business.
I think if you're in academia now and you're sitting there, you're working on your PhD or you're doing your postdoc or you're assistant professor, I warmly advise you to look beyond and try to be more open-minded, curious, and imagine, broaden up a little bit what's happening outside of the context where I am at the moment. So you get a broader perspective of things. When we are in academia, we tend to think we know everything, yeah? But there is so much more to it. So this is the advice I would give for any PhD and postdoc. Try to look beyond. And it includes being curious, reading articles that maybe doesn't really apply to you yet. Read newspapers, listen to TED Talks, listen to other people, what they have done in their careers, and lift your eyes beyond the horizon. That's my advice. And the second advice is work with yourself. I just read today, and this today is the 9th of February, an article and a blog on LinkedIn written by an influencer. And he said, adaptability, but working with yourself, you know, in the future, people will be more and more recruited on their personal traits. Because in the end, you can be really good and have the best technical tools. But if you're not the person people like to work with, you're going to make your career very, very tough. Then there are exceptions, but they usually require different leadership.
Hey, Postdoc Transformer, are you curious to ask professors, principal investigators, visiting scientists, postdocs, PhD students, and candidates some in-depth life and career guiding questions? But it feels cringe, so you end up not asking? Buy our Postdoc Transformation card game to have more fun and valuable insights in your journal club, lab and mentoring meetings, lab rotations, during conferences, panels and breaks at the Mensa. You'll get 10 intriguing mentoring questions per career level. So 10 for PhD students, 10 for postdocs, 10 for professors, 10 for parental scientists, underprivileged and underrepresented and underserved scientists. Check them out with our discount coupon on the Postdoc Transformation shop, linked on postdoctransformation.com.
This third and last one is, and this is, I say, because I coach so many people that are PhDs and postdocs still do that. That is, you have to make up your mind. If you decide to go for a professorship, you have to focus on that. Because there's so few that are going to succeed to be a professor. So you must stay focused. If you don't go for full professorship, you must focus on leaving. Don't try to do both. It doesn't work. You will just be like a boat on the ocean without a sail. You will circle around on the ocean and gap around, and you will feel after 5-6 years very, very, very confused. That's my advice.
Thank you so much. And the buzzword for my own students is oscillation. Okay, so living oscillation. This is really not a great state of mind to be oscillating between two options. So make up your mind and focus on that 100%, because I totally agree, to become a professor is tough and it depends on a huge portion of luck. But if you're not determined, if you're not putting 100% into that, then you'll be less competitive.
Yeah.
Because there will be people who have more time at their hands, they have less responsibilities and whatever. So if you don't focus, you don't get anything in academia.
No, you don't. And I'd just like to add something here, because that was, you say, summarized so very well what I think. But there is another thing. I get a lot of questions around, I like to have work-life balance when you pursue an academic career. And I, as a coach, then say the following, and listen carefully. It's perfectly fine to have work-life balance. You can work 10 hours a week, but you're going to compete with people working 80 to 100.
So, Dr. Tina Persson, I already said that you have your own podcast, which I absolutely recommend to all my listeners. And which one of the episodes is the most controversial or most inspiring, or what can you recommend listening to right away once we have finished this episode?
There is one that I really love, and that's because it's a former client of mine. Her name is Gry Wester. She was a lecturer in London, and her transformation took a while, and she is sharing very openly about her transformation, that it wasn't always very easy. But that is one of my favorite podcasts from that sense, that it really shows how much work she put in to change her mindset. And she's very open about that. That is why I always recommend that specific podcast with my clients.
Perfect. And we'll make sure to link to that episode in your show notes.
Yeah. That's wonderful. And for anyone interested in adaptability, I have a newsletter on LinkedIn. I have a blog on my webpage. So just follow me. You can subscribe on my newsletter, and then you will be updated with all the articles, because I'm going to share a lot of information here in the future, because it's happening so much. So stay tuned on my channel.
Remember, you are a postdoc transformer. You are highly intelligent, well-educated, a bachelor, master, and maybe you have already your doctor under your belt, or you are a postdoc. You are internationally experienced, fluent in English, a leader and expert in your prior research field. You're resilient, brilliant in adaptation and problem solving. You are eager to bring in the transferable and monetizable skills needed in many companies to embrace the future and to become or remain an innovator in their markets. Do you want a transcript of our episode? And our episode sponsors answers to all 6 bold questions so that you can choose to apply? Do you want to nominate your potential employer of choice so that we can ask them our bold questions? For all of that, click on our links in our show notes and on our website, www.postdoctransformation.com. Remember to check your readiness to leap out of science and to enroll in our free email course, Career Transition Made Simple. Thanks for your attention. I'm Professor Dr. Eleanor Zoe Winkles, the host of your seasonal Postdoc Transformation Show. Postdoc Transformation.